You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Tuesday, May 30th. Do you know what day it is? It's Today in Sports Betting. Welcome to another edition of Today in Sports Betting. I'm your host, Doug Reed, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at Doug_Reed34. This is Sports Ethos presentation, and if you haven't checked us out already, please do head to our website at sportsethos.com, where you can find all the information, packages, subscription services that we have for every sport, whether you're into wagering, whether you're into fantasy, whether you're into DFS. We've got you covered, from free podcasts to articles to very reasonable packages for our members. So go to sportsethos.com and check us out. Also, go to our YouTube, Sports Ethos YouTube page, because this Wednesday, we're going to have a live feed with Michael Fiddle and Keith Cork talking about the NBA Finals and some angles and some props. So two guys who really know their stuff. If you don't already, check them out on Twitter. Michael's at mfiddle14, that's M-F-I-D-D-L-E, and then the numbers 1 and 4. And Keith is at Ethos Keith, E-T-H-O-S Keith. So great guys to follow. Lots of interesting, relevant pieces they put out. And if you're an NBA fan, basketball fan, you definitely want to check these guys out. So 7:30 Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, May 31st, on our YouTube page. Check those guys out there. And I think you'll enjoy that show. I will definitely be tuning in. So today, we have no NBA as we wait until the start of the championship round on Thursday between the Heat and the Denver Nuggets, after the Heat almost choked away a 3-0 lead in the series, but won Game 7 last night in dramatic fashion. Well, not in dramatic fashion at the end of the day, in easy fashion. But quite the series as they head into the finals as the first team from the play-in round to make the finals. So it should be interesting. Nuggets are huge favorites, but I think it's going to be a little tighter series than people think. I think the Nuggets win, but I can see it going 6 and the Heat stealing maybe a game or two early in Denver. I know that they're 8.5, around 9-point underdogs right now heading into Thursday's game. I think I'd actually lean to the Heat if that gets to 9, but we'll talk about that probably tomorrow. And then the NHL, we have to wait until Saturday for the Stanley Cup to start in Las Vegas, where the Florida Panthers are playing the Golden Knights. So before we get to today's full slate of baseball games, I just thought I'd give you a few interesting pieces of this day in sports history. Way back in 1983, Major League Baseball President Lee McPhail suspended New York Yankees owner George Steinbrenner for 1 week for his criticizing of umpires. It would be interesting to see how Mr. Steinbrenner would exist in today's world of social media and whatnot, but suspended 1 week for criticizing the umps. 1985, on this day, Edmonton won their second straight Stanley Cup with an 8-3 win over Philadelphia to win the series 4-2. Gretzky and Curry had 3 assists each in that game. The start of the dynasty in Edmonton. And then in 1986, a very young Barry Bonds debuted with the Pittsburgh Pirates and went on to a long, legendary, yet to be in the Hall of Fame career. I personally think he should be, but that's a topic for another show. But he started way back when in 1986 on this day, May 30th, with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So a little walk down memory lane. Now let's get into the large baseball slate. I'm not going to go into great detail on a lot of these games, so we'll go through them as quick as we can, but I do want to touch on a few. We start in Detroit at 6:40 in the East, where the Tigers host Martin Perez and the Texas Rangers. Okay, just pulling up my feet here. You can get the road Rangers at -130 in the money line, the home Tigers at +120. But 8.5 is the total. Juice to the over. So money's obviously coming in on the over. It's currently at 8.5, but juice to -120 I see on DraftKings. Now, Perez comes in, kind of had an averagey 6-1 record, but that's a function of Texas's offense. 56 in the third inning, 3.83 ERA, 1.47 whip, 16 walks, 47 strikeouts. So he's done all right. Not a great whip, obviously, but ERAs, he's been controlling the base runners and doing well. Alex Faedo is only 21 and two-thirds innings into the season, 4.15 ERA, 0.74 whips. So that's pretty impressive. One walk and 22 strikeouts. Now, when I look at Perez's box scores, he pitched well against Pittsburgh last game. Got beat up a little bit by Oakland, 5 innings, 4 earned runs. Prior to that, against the Angels, 3.2 innings, 7 earned runs. And he had a string of 3 good outings before that. So he's pitched fairly well, but not fantastic. Kind of, I think, typical of his career. And Faedo at his, 20 to 21 and two-thirds innings, still a little early in the career to judge. Although he has gone over 5 innings in each of his last 3 starts, allowing 6 innings, 2 earned runs to the White Sox, 5 innings, 3 earned runs to the Nationals, and 6 innings, 3 earned runs to Seattle. So not exactly a slew of great offenses, and they've hit him a little. Now, he's only given up 1 walk, and that's why his whip is so low. Strike out any kind of guy, but only given up 1 walk. So I think you can keep him in the game. But my angle here is I like the money line, but not at -130. On DraftKings, today they have another 50% profit boost. So I actually jumped on this with the 50% profit boost, which takes it up to +115. So if you can get +115 on DraftKings.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For the money line here for Texas, that is what I would be on. Next game, also 6:40 East. We are in Miami, where San Diego is in town. You can get the home Marlins at -140, the road Padres at +120. Total here is 8.5. Juice the under at -115. So obviously money coming in on the under here. And the reason is Sandy Alcantara, the righty for Miami, is on the hill. 63 innings, 4.86 ERA. Now this is a guy who won the National League Cy Young last year, so he's been struggling. Part of that is he's given up 20 walks in 63 innings, so he's been allowing a few too many base runners. 57 strikeouts, never been over a strikeout kind of guy, but because he pitches so much and they let him throw so deep, he does tend to rack out some strikeout numbers. 1.22 whip. He's facing Ryan Weathers, the lefty. He's only 29 and two-thirds innings, 3.94 ERA, and 1.21 whip. So with 11 walks and 18 strikeouts. I kind of lean here to San Diego, to be honest with you. Now, Weathers hasn't been hot out of the gate, but he's been pitching all right. And San Diego's lineup at +120, if you can get them +120 in the money line, I would lean that way. Excuse me. They just have too much firepower in that offense, even going against Alcantara, who's maybe not up to what he has been in the past. So I could see them putting a few runs on the board. And Miami's offense is always struggling, so I wouldn't really back them a whole lot tonight. Next game in Baltimore, we have the Cleveland Guardians in town to face Kyle Gibson and the Baltimore Orioles. The O's come in as the favorites at -140. You can get the Guardians at +120. Total here is 9, juice to the over at -115. For Cleveland on the hill is their righty, Cal Quantrill. 55 innings, 4.75 ERA, 1.35 whip, just 18 walks and just 31 strikeouts. Kyle Gibson for Baltimore, 66 innings, 3.82 ERA, 1.3 whip, 22 walks, 44 strikeouts. Now, Gibson is a guy I've always struggled with trying to get a hold of. I don't like betting on him because he's fairly inconsistent throughout his career. However, he is having a good year. You know, 1.3 whip isn't great, but that's kind of what to expect from him because he walks too many guys. You know, he's basically walking 3 guys per 9, so 66 innings, 22 walks. But 3.82 is pretty respectable. When I look at his recent game logs, now this game is in Baltimore, okay? So favorite to the pitchers because of the deep wall in left field now. But his last few games against the Yankees at New York, 7 innings, just 2 hits, no walks, pardon me, no earned runs, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. Against Toronto, start before that, 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. Against Pitt, 5 innings, 7 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. And then against Tampa, 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. So against, he held the Yankees to no runs over 7, held the Jays to 1 run over 7, and held Tampa to 2 runs over 6. Those are 3 pretty solid offenses. Arguably top 5 or 6, certainly top 10 offenses, you'd have to think, in the majors. And he has done quite well against all those. 3 of his last 4 starts have been very good. Cal Quantrill on the other side, I have even less faith in. He got knocked around pretty good last game by Chicago. 4 innings, 4 hits, 6 earned runs. Prior to that, at the Mets, were a struggling offense, 5 2/3, 5 2/3, 3 earned runs. And against Angels at home, prior to that, 6 innings, 3 earned runs. He's been very inconsistent. And I don't have a whole lot of faith. He just doesn't strike out enough guys. 55 innings, 31 strikeouts. He's not missing enough bats. And when you have the stuff that he has, you need to be missing more bats, because I don't think his pinpoint control is going to have a whole lot of success against these good offenses. And Baltimore's a good offense. Second in the AL East, just behind the red-hot, league-leading, Major League Baseball-leading Tampa Bay Rays. So I like the O's offense here. I was actually debating using the profit boost on this. But if you can get them, minus 140 is just a little too high for me. When I look at where the numbers are coming in here, sorry, I was trying to pull up the betting spreads here. I see, yeah, most of the money's coming in on the H Stills. 78% of the bets on the Orioles money line, 86% of the money. So some of the bigger money is coming in, but only a little bit more. On the run line, we're at about 59% of the bets, 62% of the money. I just don't know. I want to lay 135 on the O's run line at home. They're going to miss that ninth inning at bat if they win. And I like their offense. I just don't know if, you know, Gibson can give up a few runs. So I would stay away from that. I would look towards the money line. If I could get it closer to minus 130, I think I would be on it. But minus 140. Right now, it's a stay away from me. Next game, we travel to Toronto, where the Jays are hosting the Milwaukee Brewers. You can get the home Jays at minus 155, the road Brewers at plus 135. And total here is 9, juice to minus 110 on both sides. And the reason the Jays are such a big spread here is because Milwaukee struggles against lefties, and the Jays is throwing Yusei Kikuchi, their lefty, to the hill. 51 to 30 innings, 4.56 ERA, 1.38 whip. Has not been doing very well. Started off pretty good, slowed down a little lately. Adrian Houser, the righty for the Brew Crew, is on the hill. Just 20 innings, 2.25 ERA, 1.25 whip. Doing a good job, limiting walks, just 4. So one every 5 innings, basically, and 14 strikeouts. But when I pull up, let me just pull up the stats of hitting against left-handed pitching. And this is where the Brewers really struggle. Batting average against left-handed pitching, .207, the worst in the majors. On-base percentage against lefties, .280, the worst in the majors. And slugging percentage against lefties, .336, the worst in the majors. So 30 teams there ranked 30 in batting average, on-base percentage, and slugging. So Kikuchi has not done all that well lately. When I pull up his game logs, in his last few starts, last start against Tampa, tough start at Tampa, 5 innings, 8 hits, 5 earned runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. Prior to that, 4 2/3 against Baltimore, gave up 3 earned runs. Prior to that, Atlanta, 4 innings, 9 hits, 4 earned runs. So 3 pretty tough starts. Everybody said he's kind of fallen apart lately. And he's been getting hit hard, for sure. But he's going to win against Tampa, Baltimore, and Atlanta. So those are 3 pretty tough offenses. Prior to that, he shut down Pitt, no runs over 6 1/3. Got hit around by Boston, 4 1/3, 5 earned runs. Prior to that, shut down the White Sox, no runs over 5 2/3. So he's been good against the weaker teams, obviously, and struggled against some of the AL East powerhouses and Atlanta. However, I consider Milwaukee a weaker team when it comes to hitting against left-handed pitching. So the Jays minus 155, I couldn't touch that. I might look at the run line of run line -1.5, but at plus 115. Again, if you listen to my show lately, I don't like taking home teams on the run line. Run line means the Jays have to win by 2. So if they're winning, they're not going to get their ninth at bat. If it goes to extra innings, you basically need the home team to hit a 2-run home run. And how many times does that happen? It happens. But, you know, they get the ghost runner on base and they cash that runner and they win by a run, and you lose. Minus 155, you can't touch Jays. -1.5 on the run line. Maybe look at that. +115. If it got, the juice got up a little higher. When I look over at FanDuel, I think it's the same. No, they're juiced to 128. That's a lot. I kind of like that number on FanDuel. So the Jays run line at +128. I'm going to look at that a little closer. But I would actually lean towards that. If I can get anywhere close to 130, -125, 130, I think I'll look at the Jays on the run line. The next game, we are in New York where the Mets are facing the Phillies. You can get the home Mets at -155. And the money line, the road Phillies at +135. Total here 8.5. Juice to the under at -120. So we're obviously seeing money coming in there. And when I look at my splits for the money's coming in, I'm seeing total 8.5. Sorry, let's just pull this up here. Yeah, I'm seeing most of the money coming in. Actually, I'm seeing money coming in, it says here, on the over 8.5, which is odd. Maybe they had it at 9 earlier, and it's down to 8.5. So, anyways, I'm not touching that. Two pitchers that I just can't get a real good feel on. For the Phillies, they start lefty Ranger Suarez. Just 11 innings, 9.82 ERA, and a 2 whip. Too hard to really tell. He struggled last year. He struggled again this year, but he's only pitched 11 innings. Kodai Senga, 48 innings, 3.94 ERA, 1.52 whip, 31 walks, 61 strikeouts. So it's interesting. He's striking guys out, so he's still kind of fooling. Well, not still. He is fooling batters in his first year in the majors. But 31 walks and 48 strikeouts. I mean, that's why you got a whip of 1.5 there, Kodai. And that is not going to last very long. Not going to have a whole lot of success playing that game. So I lean to the Mets. Can't take a -155. On the run line, again, home team, the Mets, I don't like to lean to. +135. When I look over at FanDuel, it's +134. So on about the same line. And, you know, Phillies bats can put up runs. Yeah, Suarez struggled. Suarez has struggled, but I do think that the Mets can get I think the Phillies can get to the Mets to Senga and potentially put up some runs. So I'm not really going to jump on that all that fast. Let me see how the Mets have done against left-handed hitting. When I pull up their numbers, so Suarez is a lefty. They have where are those New York Mets? Yeah, that's what I thought. Slightly below average. So 408 slugging, which is 21st in the majors. 322 on base, which is 19th. And a 249 batting average, which is also right around that 19th. So right around the, you know, two-thirds, 67th percentile kind of thing against lefties. So not great, but not terrible. So I think they can get to Suarez. He's been all over the map. When I pull up maybe a first five inning line, see what the line is for the Mets number in the first five. In the first five innings for the Mets, their team total over 2.5 is +105. And that's not a bad price. So can the Mets get to Suarez for 3 runs or more in the first five innings, +105? I might consider that. You can also get a same game, a DK profit boost for 20% on this game for the yes run first inning or no run first inning. And that's at -115 right now. If anything, I would lean towards the under, but I don't think I'm going to be on this. I mean, both pitches have been struggling. Suarez has really been struggling. Again, the Mets, not a great offense against lefties. So if I had to take a side, I would lean to the under. So basically no run first inning, yes or no prop. So Nerfy, no run first inning at -115. You get that boosted by 20%. You're going to get in positive territory. Might be some value there to look at. Going to take a quick break. And when we get back, continue with this late. A major league base. All right, the next game, 7-10 in the East. We are in Fenway Park where the Red Sox host the Cincinnati Reds. You can get the home Red Sox as huge favorites at -175. The road Reds at +150. The money line, or the run line here, total. Sorry, the total is 9.5, juice to the over at -115. And for the Red Sox, you get young righty Brian Bello, 35 and a third innings, 4.08 ERA, 1.44 whip, 12 walks, 37 strikeouts. Ben Lively, on the other side for Cincinnati, 17 innings, 2.65 ERA, 0.88 whip, just 3 walks and 18 strikeouts. So has done quite well in his return to the majors. And this surprises me why the Red Sox are such heavy favorites. Obviously, in 9.5, I know it's defended, but they're expecting some runs to be scored. But when you look at what Lively's done in his 2 outings this year, in his return to the majors, against St. Louis last week, 6 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts, 103 pitches. That's a respectable outing. St. Louis has been hitting well. Prior to that, against the Yankees, he took the loss. He went 5 2/3, just 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts on 83 pitches. Again, a pretty impressive outing. Giving up, 2 runs to St. Louis and 2 runs to the Yankees. Pretty decent numbers. Hasn't walked as well, just 3 walks in 17 innings. On the flip side, you have Bello. I don't like keep calling him Bello. Brian Bello. His last few outings have been decent as well. I mean, he's keeping the ball in the park. Gave up a couple home runs last game. But prior to that, he had given up none to Seattle and then won in his first 4 starts. So not giving up a lot of home runs and not giving up a ton of walks, which has kind of been his success. And 37 strikeouts in 35 innings, so getting a few strikeouts. Last game out, he held the Angels, took the loss, but held the Angels to 2 runs over 7 innings, just 6 hits and no walks, 6 strikeouts. Prior to that against Seattle, 5 innings, 3 hits, an earned run, 5 walks, 7 strikeouts. The always tough Atlanta Braves before that, 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, a walk, and 5 strikeouts. So he's done well. I would look, if anything, to the under, although money's obviously coming in on the over. It's juiced up to minus 115. Games in Boston, so maybe a few extra runs expected to be scored. The Red Sox offense was doing really well through early May. Then they went on the road and they've kind of struggled. So I'm wondering if they're thinking they get the home park boost here, because I just don't understand. I mean, the Reds struggle, but at plus 150 in the money line, I think there's some value there. I'm not saying Lively is going to come in and completely shut down the Red Sox, but he did a good job against St. Louis. He did a good job against the Yankees. Just trying to look at maybe some pitcher props for him, because he went 103 pitches last game and 83 pitches. So obviously they don't have a restriction on his strikeouts. When I see his strikeouts over 3.5, I think I'm going to be on that over 3.5 for Lively. Now, Boston isn't a huge strikeout team. Let me try and pull up the numbers, but over 3.5 plus 100. I see that on DraftKings. He struck out 8 against St. Louis, and he struck out 8 against the Yankees. As I said, 103 pitches and 83 pitches. So, call it 90 pitches he's averaging. They're not limiting him in what he can do or his time on the mound. So, don't have the Red Sox or the teams. Oh, yeah, there I do. I'm sorry. I do have team strikeouts total. Now, I know Boston has not been a huge strikeout team. They are, where are they, 19th, 8.54, so 8.5 strikeouts per 9. So a little less than one. So if Lively can get little less than one per inning, so if Lively can get through 4 innings, he stands a good chance, I think, to hit this prop. So I think I'll probably be on that. Ben Lively over 3.5 strikeouts against Boston. Next game we go to, let me just back out of that, is in St. Louis, the Battle of Missouri, where Kansas City is in town to play the Cards. For the Cards, you get them as a big favorite, obviously at minus 190 at the money line. The Royals plus 160. Total here is 9. Juiced to the over at minus 115. So money obviously coming in at that number. I would actually lean to the under, to be honest with you, at minus 105. And for KC, you get Zach Greinke, who comes in with a brutal 1-5 record, although that's obviously irrelevant when it comes to wagering. 57 in the third innings, 4.55 ERA, just 8 walks, 41 strikeouts, 1.19 ERA. Having a pretty good year lately. Those numbers don't look extraordinary, but he started brutal. And if you've listened to my show before, he's been brutal. Last year was pretty brutal on the road, and he started this year brutal on the road. But he's actually turned it around. I'll get to his stats in a second. But he's having 8 walks and 57 in the third innings. That's impressive. That's why he's got a 1.19 ERA. Miles Michaelis, on the other hand, the righty for St. Louis, has also turned around lately. 61 and 2/3, 4.23 ERA, 1.39 whip, not very impressive whip, 14 walks and 48 strikeouts. So he's not striking out a lot. He's not walking a crazy amount, but he's giving up too much contact. But when I look at Greinke, who recently, or not last year, year and a half, has been brutal on the road, now all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, he had two, end of April, two poor road starts. Since then, He's had two starts in the road, one at the White Sox, not a great offense, 5 2/3 inning, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, no walks, 4 strikeouts, and one at Milwaukee, 5 innings, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, no walks, 5 strikeouts. So decent, not great outings, but decent outings. And, you know, those are in the middle of another good outing. Average outing against the White Sox, shut down Baltimore at home, 5 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs in early May. And his most recent, no decision against Detroit at home, 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, a walk, and 5 strikeouts. Maybe hasn't pitched against the best of competition, but he hasn't been getting crushed in the road like has happened in the past. I think this number is factoring that in, that he will get crushed in the road. Because Michaelis started out fairly slow, but in 3 of his last 4 games, he's given up 1 or no earned runs. No earned runs in 7 innings against Cincinnati's last time out against an impressive Dodgers lineup. 7 innings, 3 earned runs for that. At Boston, 6 innings, just 1 earned run. And at the Cubbies, 4 1/3 innings and 1 earned run. So he has been, like I said, just giving up a few too many hits and some walks, but not a lot. But he's been keeping the ball in the park. So he hasn't been hurting himself. He's given up, two home runs in his last 6 starts. So he's not hurting himself, even if he's allowing a few runners, keeping the Cards in the games and the Cards backs woken up. So I like the Cards here. Can't lay -190. If anything, I would look to the under 9. I think both these pitchers have kind of come back to life, come back to what you expect from them. But Greinke always scares me on the road, so it's a stay away from me because I don't really want to touch that, to be honest with you. Next game in Chicago, where the Cubbies are hosting the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays come in as prohibitive favorites at -190. You can get the home Cubbies at +160. Total here is 8.5. Juice to the over at -115. And the reason this is a low-scoring game is Tampa has their ace, Shane McClanahan, on the hill. A perfect 8-0, 64 innings, 1.97 ERA, 1.13 whip. I think right now he's got to be the leader for the AL Cy Young. I know Garrett Cole's been doing well. A couple guys in Minnesota have been doing well, but I think he's got to be the leader. The question is, can he get through the whole year? If he continues to put up these numbers, or numbers even close to this, yes, he will. Just 25 walks, 75 strikeouts in 64 innings. Going against Kyle Hendricks, who's only made 1 start rebounding from injury, 4 innings, 6.23 ERA, 1.85. What really relevant to talk about his stats. We all kind of know who Kyle Hendricks is, a soft tosser who doesn't traditionally get a lot of strikeouts, doesn't walk a lot of guys. You know, he's kind of like a Greinke clone, because Greinke was much more of a strikeout artist earlier in his career, and Hendricks has never been a strikeout artist, but he struggled with injuries the last couple seasons. So making his way back, I don't think he can hold Tampa in check here, but I can't lay -190, and I don't like laying a negative number on the run line. Tampa, you can get Tampa run line at -1.5 and -115, so can't really touch that. I like the Rays. I like them to get the Hendricks for a few runs, maybe a Rays team total, because I don't think Hendricks is back yet. And frankly, even if he is back and healthy, his last year or so of pitching prior to his injury, he looked very mediocre. Now, I know we've all probably counted this guy out a few times in his career because he kind of shows nothing that you think makes him a good major league pitcher. But he's kind of like from the Greg Maddux tree. And I'm not saying he's anything like Greg Maddux, if you follow Greg Maddux years ago, a Hall of Fame pitcher. But just gets by with his stuff. And he has his whole career. But eventually that's going to come to an end. And when you're a Hall of Famer like Greg Maddux, it might not be as pronounced. But a guy like Kyle Hendricks, when it's coming to an end, it's going to be pretty pronounced. And I think he may be there. So I'm not going to back him against Tampa Bay. If anything, I would look at maybe a Tampa total run line, because they're the away team as well. So they're going to get the 9 at-bats against a pretty discombobulated, is probably a good word, a bullpen for the Cubs. They're kind of all over the map, and I'm not really sure they know what's going on. So Hendricks probably isn't long for this game anyways. I can't see him going much more than 4 innings. Sorry, 5 innings. He went 4 1/3 in his opening start. Can't see him going much more than 5. And then they get to that bullpen, which the Rays could do damage against. Next game, also in Chicago. Skip the game. Let's go to Houston first. In Houston, where the Astros face the Twins, the home Astros are -115, and the road Twins are -105. This game actually opened at some books with Houston at +100, which I thought was some good value. I didn't jump on it because Belak's pitching. I'm not really sure that he can beat Joe Ryan in Minnesota, but I thought Houston at home at plus money was a good deal, but I've missed that boat. As I check on FanDuel, I think they're down -105. Now they're only -102, so they're close to even money. So shop around. If you can get this at plus money, like +100, I'd be on Houston. Houston's hot lately. Arguably still, well, not with Tampa right now, but second best team, I would think. Although I think they're second in the AL West, but good team. Jose Altuve's back. They've been rolling lately, quietly rolling, because they're still behind Texas. And everybody just kind of thinks Houston's going to do their thing. So I don't think anybody's paying attention, but they're having a good run. And I think right now they're in a situation where they can beat anybody. But the books don't look at it like that. Well, they do now because they're slight favorites at -115. Totaler's 8.5. Not juicy either way. Both sides are -110. For the home Stros, you get Brandon Belak. He comes in 25 1/3 innings, 3.55 ERA, 1.54 whip, 9 walks, 22 strikeouts. Going against one of those Cy Young candidates that I said from Minnesota, Joe Ryan, the righty, 7-1, 61 innings, 2.21 ERA, 0.95 whip, just 10 walks and 70 strikeouts. Joe Ryan has been an absolute machine this year. And the unfortunate thing for him and Sonny Gray is they pitch for a team that can't seem to hit. Now, Minnesota's woken up a little lately, but my gosh, these guys were on, you know, any of the top few teams. I know they're leading the Central, but if they're on Texas, they're on Houston, if they're on Tampa, New York, Boston, Baltimore, Toronto, people would be raving about these guys, but they kind of seem to fly under the radar because although his record's 7-1, Minnesota's not really producing the offense to help these guys as much as you would think. So Ryan comes in as a prohibitive favorite, but the Astros are up to -115 on the money line. I'm not on this game. If, like I said, if I can get Houston at plus money, I'd be on Houston. I know Ryan's had a fantastic run, and when I look at his numbers recently, he's given up he hasn't given up more than 200 runs in a game in his last six starts. One against San Francisco in 5 innings, 2 against the Angels in 6 innings, shut down the Cubbies over 6 innings, 2 runs against Cleveland over 6 innings, 0 against the White Sox over 6 innings. The thing is, none of those teams are good hitting teams. So the White Sox and Cubbies, pretty average teams. Cleveland's a bad hitting team. San Fran, although they're hot lately, they haven't been doing that well. In the Angels game, he got 2 runs. Prior to that, against the Yankees, only 1 earned run in 7, and then 3 earned runs against Boston, but that was back in mid-April, so a while ago. So Ryan is a good pitcher. Don't get me wrong, a very good pitcher. He's given up 1 home run this last 7 games. So he's just not hurting himself. Against Houston, they got some guys who can knock the ball out of the park. So if they can get some runners on and get some traffic going, I think they can get to him. So my point is, Joe Ryan, I think, is a lead pitcher right now in the AL, contending for a Cy Young because that's what his numbers say. But when you look at who he's faced, let's watch him a little bit. Let's watch where his next few starts goes next month, dude, if he's facing some real competition, because competition from the AL Central is definitely below average. Brandon Belak, on the other hand, he's been doing all right. 1.54 whip, as I said, is a little ugly, and he's been giving up the long ball too much. So in his last 7 games, he's given up 7. But 3 of those came against Milwaukee. So if he can keep the ball in the park, and Minnesota's got some boppers, but Minnesota hasn't been hitting for a lot of power. If he can keep the ball in the park, I think he can keep this game close. And bullpens, call them equal. Hitting lineup definitely favors Houston. And I think that if Belak can keep the game close and Stros can get to Ryan for a couple runs, I think they have a chance to win. I don't think it's out of the range. So you're getting plus money with one of the best offenses in baseball. I would look to back Houston. Not on the game, but I would look to back Houston. Then back to Chicago for the White Sox, who face the LA Angels. You can get the home Sox at -140. The road Angels at +120. Total here is 9. Just to the over at -115. On the bump for the Stros, Lucas Giolito, 63rd 1/3 innings, 3.98. ERA 1.26 with 19 walks and 64 strikeouts. On the flip side, Tyler Anderson, 48 2/3, 4.81 ERA, 1.56 whip, ouch, 23 walks and 30 strikeouts. And just when I had figured thought I had figured both these guys out. It went the other way. So Giolito struggled out of the gate, and then he pitched a few good games in a row, and I thought, okay, he's finally back. And he had a bit of a hiccup against Houston. Gave up four runs over six innings. Then he came back against KC, six innings, six hits, one run, one walk and four strikeouts, 89 pitches. I'm like, okay, he's kind of right of the ship. He seems to be doing all right. I'll give him the mulligan against Houston. Then he goes in Detroit last game out, 3 2/3 innings, six hits, four earned runs, seven walks, four strikeouts, one home run, 89 pitches. That ain't good. So I don't know what to think of Giolito anymore. Here's the White Sox season in a nutshell. He's been wildly inconsistent. Lance Lynn has been wildly inconsistent. And Dylan Cease just looks like his arm's falling off. Those three guys, and this is why I do have a future on them to win the division, so let my bitterness run through here. Those three guys, if they can collectively wake up, even if two of the three of them can wake up and return to what they did last year, close to what they did last year, the AL Central is wide open. I don't care what anybody says. Minnesota's pitching has been great, but that's it. And as I said, earlier, Joe Ryan's got some fantastic stats against pretty mediocre teams. I think that the White Sox aren't as bad as everybody's saying. And if their bats, who have woken up a little, continue and get back to where they were last year, and these guys can wake up on the mound, Giolito included, they can make a bit of a run. But right now, I'm not really sure about tonight. Then the flip side, Tyler Anderson. I thought I figured this guy out. When he's on the hill, especially against the right-hand heavy hitting team, he's terrible. So what does he do? He goes out last game, six innings against the Red Sox, who are decent against lefties. Five hits, one earned run, two walks, three strikeouts. Prior to that, against Baltimore, five innings, three earned runs. Respectable against Cleveland, six innings, three earned runs. Not really respectable. Prior to that, five innings against Texas, a very good offense, five hits, two earned runs, five walks, and six strikeouts. So his problem is walks. 48 and two-thirds innings, 23 walks. Just giving up way too many walks. Giving up a little over a hit an inning, but you can't give up that many walks. And he's given up seven home runs in his, eight starts this year. So maybe a few too many there. But the White Sox used to be lefty killers. They're not really anymore. They're about league average against lefties. So I'm not really sure which side I would go here. Can't really back either of these pitchers. A little too inconsistent for me. We go to Oakland, which could be the worst team of all time. They're trending to win somewhere around 40, low 40s games. That would be like 100. If they win 40 games, that means 122 losses. I heard somebody say today, you can compare them to a team from the late 1800s, their offense and their win percentage. They're just god-awful. There's no other way to look at this. And you're going to see that in this line. So the Braves open as minus 250 favorites. I'm surprised it's that low, to be honest with you. Oakland plus 210, totally 8.5, juice to the under at minus 115. Bryce Elder's on the hill for the Braves. J.P. Sears, who actually looks like a decent pitcher, not great, but a decent pitcher. But he's got no chance. He's got no chance in any game he plays. Now, I know there's a chance he could win, but come on, how can we back either side here? Not either side. How can we back either side? I can't take the Braves at minus 250. And I certainly can't take plus 210 on the Oakland Athletics. Even if you've been taking these wild, huge money lines on Oakland all year, you would be well underwater in your performance. Bankroll and unit size. They've been just getting crushed. Elder comes in 58 and a third innings, 2.01 ERA, 1.17 whip, 16 walks, 51 strikeouts. Having a good year. Don't know how he's 3-0. Don't know how he keeps doing it, but he does. He just keeps kind of trucking along. And, last time out against the Dodgers, six innings, seven hits, one earned run, a walk, six strikeouts. Prior to that against Seattle, two earned runs and six innings. The Jays, good offense, five earned runs and four innings. Baltimore, one earned run over five and a third. Shut down Miami over seven. The guy just keeps doing it. Smoking mirrors, but he's doing it. And now he's going against the A's. So we got J.P. Sears on the hill. Like I said, 53 and two-thirds innings, 4.7 ERA, 10 walks, 52 strikeouts. So not getting killed by walks. Strikeout an inning almost. And a 1.1 whip. Those are pretty impressive numbers. But he's 0-3. He's got no chance. He's got no chance to ever win. Last game out against Seattle, 5 innings, 1 run. Against a very good Houston offense, 6 innings, 2 runs, a walk, 7 strikeouts. Against Texas before that, five and a third innings, 2 runs, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. He did get knocked around by the Yankees prior to that. So he's pitched against some decent teams, and he's done well. You know, if you got the guts to do it, the play here is on the Oakland money line, but I can't back them. Their offense is so bad, and Atlanta's offense is so good. I've got to look at them and score some runs. I can see why the totals here is juiced to the under. I'm not going to be on it, but I think both. First of all, Oakland can't score, so Elder should have a good game. And Sears has been running hot lately, but I can't really think that he's going to be able to shut down the Braves offense. And when I look at the money, it is juiced to the under on DraftKings, but I see about 90% of the money now coming in on the over, 74% of the bets. So I would lean, I'm not leaning it anyway. I'm not going to put my name on the line here for this game. Next game is in Seattle, where the Yankees are on a West Coast road trip. The home M's minus 140 favorites. The road Yankees plus 120. Total here is 7. Juice to the over, minus 120. Yeah, I don't think it would be juice to the over when the Yankees are playing. On the hill for Seattle is Logan Gilbert, 60 innings, 3.6 ERA, 0.92 whip, 10 walks, 69 strikeouts. Having a great season. Nestor Cortez, nasty Nestor for the Yanks. 51 in the third innings, 5.3 ERA, 1.27 whip, 16 walks, 32 strikeouts. And if anything, I would lean here to the Yankees. And, I mean, I think Gilbert is a better pitcher right now, but Seattle offense is not better than the Yankees, that's for sure. I'm just trying to pull up their starting lineup, see if they know they wouldn't be posted as of yet. Cortez is a lefty. You know, they got J.P. Crawford leading off. Jared Kelenic's a lefty. Other than that, it's pretty much right and switch hitters for Seattle. But when you go Gleyber Torres, Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu, Willie Calhoun batting fifth, which kind of surprised me. That's a pretty tough and impressive lineup. After that, you got Kiner Falefa, Jacob Bowers, Kyle Higashioka catching. Sorry, wasn't sure if he was catching or not. And then Volpe, the rookie, playing short. It's a weak bottom half of the order, but I just don't think that Seattle's offense necessarily really scares me going against Cortez, who's been hot and cold. He had a great breakout 2 years ago, had a good year last year. And Nasty Nestor's kind of been hot and cold lately. You know, in those recent games, 4 runs in 6 innings to Baltimore at Toronto, just 2 runs in 6 innings. Home versus Tampa, 6 runs in 4 1/3, just 2 against Oakland. Prior to that, 7 and 4 2/3 against Texas. So he's certainly given up some runs. The M's offense just doesn't scare me. So you get the Yankees plus money. If anything, I lean here to the Yanks at plus 120 on the money line. Not on it yet, but it may take that play because Gilbert's been going well, but the Yankees can hit anybody, I believe. So I would lean towards the Yanks there. In Arizona is the next game, 9:40 in the East, and we have their ace, Zach Gallen, on the hill against Kyle Freeland in the lefty of the Rockies. You can get the home D-backs at minus 250, the road Rockies at plus 210. Total here is 8.5. Juiced at minus 110 on both sides. For Gallen in the D-backs, 66 and 2/3, 2.97 ERA, 14 walks, 75 strikeouts, 1.02 ERA. Having a great year. Been hit a little bit lately, but more so on the road. He still continues to do very well at home. Kyle Freeland has been getting hit by everybody. 58 and 1/3, 3.86 ERA, 14 walks, 42 strikeouts, 1.29 whip. Not terrible, certainly not worse in the league. And he's had a couple of decent outings lately. So his last game at home, in course, against Miami, 5 innings, 2 earned runs, but gave up 7 hits and 2 walks. Prior to that, at Texas, 2 innings, 9 hits, 8 runs, 5 earned, no walks, no strikeouts. But before that, against Philly, shut them out over 6 innings, 2 runs at Pittsburgh over 7 innings, against Milwaukee, no runs over 5 innings before that. So other than that one blow up against Texas, in his last 6 starts, he has given up two runs or less in every one of them. So a little more respectable than what you'd come to think at the start of the year. Gallen, on the other hand, has been pitching great at home. His last two outings have been on the road at Philly, 5 2/3, 5 hits, 2 walks, 2 earned runs, and 3 strikeouts. Prior to that, at Pittsburgh, his worst out in the year, 3 2/3, 8 hits, 8 runs, 5 earned, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts. He's only given up 2 home runs all year. That's impressive. Hasn't given up a home run in his last 7 starts. That's a pretty impressive number. That's why he's having success this year. And I'm not sure Colorado on the road can get to him. Colorado on the road can't get to anybody, but I can't lay minus 250. There's no way I'm laying minus 250 at the D-backs. The run line's minus 125. Can't do that either. If anything, I would look to the under at 8.5, but really no play there for me. Next game in San Francisco, where the, I wouldn't say streaking, but the hot Giants are minus 145 favorites against Pittsburgh Pirates. You have Johan Oviedo plus 125 for the Pirates. Total here is under minus 115. And that's probably, I don't think I'd go there. I'm not going to touch that because the Giants start John Brebbia. So this would be an opener, I think. 22 innings, 3.68 ERA, 1.09 whip, just 7 walks, 31 strikeouts. 31 strikeouts in 22 innings. Pretty impressive. And I'm not sure. I think last time they did an opener, they did your classic one inning and then let the follower come in for 3 or 4. The flip side, though, you have Johan Oviedo, 53 2/3, 4.78 ERA, 1.53 whip, 25 walks, 48 strikeouts, not having a good year. Yeah, Brebbia in his last, he's gone more than one to third innings 3 games ago. But other than that, he's only got one inning. So he is your classic starter, opener, and then on to the bullpen. Whereas Oviedo, a couple of good starts early. And I remember back in mid-April, he went into Colorado, gave up one run over 6 innings. And everybody's like, wow, it's impressive in Colorado. And then he's been hit pretty hard since. Then he had a good game, 3 starts ago at Baltimore, 5 innings, 1 earned run. Next game against Arizona, 6 innings, 1 earned run. Against Texas last week, 5 2/3, 6 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. I'm just not really sold on how good Oviedo is. And I think the Giants can get to him. They've been hitting well. They've been scoring. They've been hitting with some power. Yeah, it's in San Francisco. So I don't think a lot of runs are going to be put up. I think I would lean towards the 8.5 under. I would lean towards the under an 8.5, just minus 115. So that's where you're seeing the money come in. But no real play there for me. Last game of the night out west in L.A., we have the Dodgers hosting the Nationals. This continues the trend of good teams against bad teams, good pitchers against bad pitchers. Some huge lines tonight. That's really why I'm not on a lot of games. Dodgers minus 320 on the money line. The Nats plus 265. Total here is 9, just to the under, minus 120. The Dodgers, Dodgers run line is at minus 150. I don't think I've ever made a bet on a run line of anywhere near minus 150. I've never taken a home team north of 300. I don't think I've ever taken a home team at north of 200. So what's interesting is the Nats run line, so plus 1.5, they have to lose by 2 runs or more, is at plus 130. I think that might be a play. I mean, I don't think I'm going to be on it, but you certainly can't back the Dodgers money line run line, and I don't really want to back Jake Nevin against the Dodgers, but Jake Irvin, sorry. Oh, I call him now Jake Irvin. He's only pitched 22 innings, 5.32 ERA, 1.59 whip, 16 walks, 19 strikeouts. But really not enough. Once he started 5 games this year, got hit around by the Mets and Detroit. Last outing, 4 innings. Against San Diego, 4 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. His numbers are all over the map. Like I said, he got hit around by Detroit, got hit around by the Mets, pitched well against the Giants at in San Francisco, and decent against the Cubs in early May. So he's had a couple decent outings. I don't have any faith in him being able to keep this game all that close. Gonsolin, 29 2/3 inning, 1.82 ERA, 0.9 whip, 11 walks, 23 strikeouts. So carrying on after his injury from what he did in the prior couple seasons, I don't think he's going to go that deep in the game. He's only went over 88 pitches once, and that was 2 starts ago against St. Louis. So they look to be limiting him around 90 pitches or so. But like I said, I just can't back, it's call it betting advice. how I've always done it over the years. I can't take a favorite at that price. It just, there's no value in that. I mean, the way baseball works, unless you're the Oakland A's, even the worst teams are going to win 40, 42, 43% of their games. And at minus 320, that number is a lot further north than that the Dodgers need should win this game. And so, even the best teams are going to win on average probably 55 to 58% of the games. You might get one or two teams, kind of the way the Rays are playing this year, that win 60% of their games. But a minus 320 line is not for me, for sure. So that wraps up the card. 15 baseball games. As I said, NBA is getting back at it on Thursday to start the championship. And the NHL is getting back at it on Saturday. Don't know why they take such a long break in the NHL. Talk about killing any momentum. I know it starts on a Saturday, but, you know, we're then, what, 3 days into June? Too late. And you're in Florida and Las Vegas for this. Anyways, that's for another show for another time. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you got some tips, some angles. And as I said at the start, go to our YouTube, our Sports Ethos YouTube page on Wednesday. So tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. and check out Michael Fiddle and Keith Cork breaking down the NBA Finals. And I think they're probably going to have a lot of prop angles and some game insight. So worth a chat. It's a live show. Two good guys know their stuff. Check them out. And if you haven't already, as I said, follow me at Doug_Reed34 on Twitter. And please rate, review, comment on your podcast provider. It helps me. It helps Sports Ethos get noticed. And it helps make a better day. So hopefully you can make money. We can make money. I can make money. And we can have a great day in sports betting.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.